Hello, friends. Welcome to this episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud producer of all the incandescent stuff included on Incandescent Women magazine and all the other channels. So thank you to Pamela Hogan and Harappa, who I'm going to get you to say your beautiful Icelandic name because I can't pronounce it. We are going to talk about their film, The Day Iceland Stood Still. But before I jump into all of that, I want to tell you a little bit about the film. When 90% of Iceland's women walked off the job and out of their homes one morning in 1975, the country came to a standstill. They refused to work, cook, or take care of the children, and they brought their country to its knees and catapulted the island nation to its status as one of the best places in the world today to be a woman. I got the opportunity to watch this film at the National Press Club last week. We are in October of 2025, so we are 50 years past this amazing event. And I'm happy to write about this for the Press Club's publication, The Wire, but I had to bring it to the Incandescent channels because it's breathtaking, it's funny, it's beautiful, and it's life-changing for women everywhere. So, Pam, first, before I want to tell people that you are a document, Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, journalist, and media creative. You have won the best TV show of 2015, named by the New York Times. You were co-creator and executive producer of the PBS series Women, War, and Peace, and so many more amazing things. All of that will be in the liner notes. And Harappa, you are a native of Reykjavik. And you've produced numerous acclaimed films on the Icelandic women's movement, including Women in Red Stockings, about this feminist wave, and the kitchen sink revolution of the women's movement of the 1980s revolution. So there's so many things to unpack here. So thank you, thank you, thank you both for being with us. All right, let's jump into this Q&A. First, what made you want to create this film?
Well, I was raised by a single mother in Boston, and she was a copywriter for an advertising agency. And one day she learned that she was making 50% of what the men with the same job were making, and she became an instant feminist. She became the first director of the National Organization of Women in Boston. And when I was like a freshman in high school, she would take me to the Massachusetts State House to lobby for the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment with her. Unfortunately, on the first day in one of our first meetings, an assemblyman said to me, "Young lady, do you really want to go to war?" And I said, "No, I do not." So she had to do a little more briefing with me before we. So, as you know, I mean, we did pass the ERA in Boston, in Massachusetts, but it came very close to passing nationally, didn't quite make it. And, I'm very grateful to her and her cohort of feminists for breaking ground for me, my generation, and subsequent generations. No question our lives are better off because of them, but I'm so aware that our feminist movement just stalled at a certain point. A long time ago, actually, to the point where today we're like the only developed country in the world that doesn't even have one day of guaranteed paid maternity leave for women. So when I went to Iceland on a family trip like 10 years ago, and I read about this women's strike, and I read about it just like in the back pages of the Lonely Planet Guide, my head exploded. I just thought, wow, like how do you get 9 out of 10 women anywhere to do the same thing at the same time? But also, how could we not know about this story? And how is it that they managed from that day to continue making such strides forward to the point that, yes, while they're still fighting today, they're not quite there. They're ahead of the rest of us. And I just became obsessed by the story. I then called Frappa. Everybody said, "You have to talk to Frappa. You have to talk to Frappa." And what happened next?
Well, I get a call from this crazy American who says to me, "Well, I would like to make a film about the women's day off in 1975." And I'm like on the phone and they're going, okay, haven't we done that?" And then I started going through it in my head. We've done this and that, and I've done this small thing. It's like, no, we haven't done it. We agreed to meet. And quickly, I felt that Pamela was somebody I could easily work with. And onward, you know, the journey started.
The long journey.
Yeah. Well, it took you, you said during the interview at the press club, it took you years to get to this place. How, talk about the process.
Well, I discovered the story in 2015. I came home and had the great luck of getting a small development grant to do some research and initial shooting. And it was when I went back for that shoot that we met and decided to team up. Honestly, Hope, I've had a really good track record of raising money for projects that I think are important. And I thought this was going to be a breeze. I mean, I couldn't remember hearing of a story that I found more compelling. But one door was slammed after another. The traditional sources of funding, you know, foundations and so forth, just for whatever reason, you know, we weren't rising to the top. Either we got rejected or we were, you know, we made it to be a finalist and we didn't quite make it, or we just literally never even heard back from them. So what happened was, which was kind of cool, this kind of grassroots method of funding started. Because what happened was when I got back from that shoot, worked with an editor to create a trailer from these interviews. We didn't have animation yet. We had a little bit of archival footage, but we had really strong interviews with the women. And Hope, word started getting around. Next thing you knew, the trailer was being shown on the floor of the General Assembly of the United Nations for Pay Equity Global Initiative. Like, what? and community screenings were being held. And people were saying, wait, I need to know how to stay in touch with you. I want to send you money for my family foundation. That's how we started getting the funding. People were hearing about it and saying, that's important. I want to help that story get made, which was really kind of wonderful. And then as the years went by, we get into the COVID lockdown, and Hrup and I, our hands were tied at that point. You know, you really couldn't do any production. There weren't even any planes from New York to Reykjavik. Plus, you had to be very careful of, you know, these were older women. And at that point, Hrup said, let's just bite the bullet. There's funding sources here in Iceland. It involves a lot of paperwork, but we can do it. And, you know, thanks to Hrup and her incredible relationships there, we did get all the final funding we needed from several sources in Iceland.
Amazing. And tell us more about then what? Because it took longer than, so how many women did you interview, A? How did you bring in the animation? Because that's a really fun part of it. It really, it brings it to life, right? Because you brought in an animator. And then what was the final push to get it to the theaters everywhere?
Well, I'll start just by saying that we interviewed dozens of women. What we wanted to create was like a collective portrait of Icelandic society at the time, men and women, and not just talk to the radical feminists. Of course, they were incredibly important to the story, and they were the first people that we interviewed. But we wanted to go beyond that and really give viewers a sense of what it was like for just an ordinary person working at a bank or at a dairy who isn't in the movement, but it starts to hear this conversation that the feminists are starting, and it starts them thinking, and then they're trying to decide, well, on that day, on the day off, should I participate? Should I not? So actually, we really needed all that time because none of those people were on the record. I mean, there aren't books written about this. You know, I wish we could have just based it on a terrific book that had been heavily researched by some fabulously brilliant person, but unfortunately, just didn't happen. So we had a team of researchers. We had, you know, just a collective effort. And someone would say, well, I heard of someone else. I mean, I think I had, I counted once, like 1,000 cups of coffee. Yeah. with people I'd heard about in Iceland who might be, have an interesting story to tell. And Hrup, of course, had lots of leads. And so it really was dozens of interviews. Unfortunately, we couldn't fit them all in the film. But what we're going to do is give all the interviews to the Women's Archive in Iceland for posterity so that people will have access to it. But maybe, Hrupa, you can explain about the animation.
Well, yes, we were having trouble locating archival footage. And we found out eventually that, like on the actual day, the TV had 3 crews out for all of the afternoon filming a lot, but all of that remained in the archive of the state station were 15 minutes of footage, because at the time they erased they were reusing the tapes. So they didn't realize how historic this whole event was. And so they erased the footage. It's gone. Well, brainstorm about what we're going to do. And Pamela said, well, what about animation? And I was just like, because, you know, that's expensive.
It can also go very wrong. It
can go very wrong. But boy, we were so lucky, or girl, we were so lucky. We found this great young man, Joel, through American contacts. And it was just an unbelievable journey, because it not only, you know, was, you know, animation kind of can reach a younger audience, but it gave us kind of artistic freedom to really render the scenes that we felt that we needed to render. And it ended up being really a good step to take.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Thank you. I think it's kind of cool that Joel Orloff, our animator, was 29 or 30 years old when we hired him. And I think that's just about the age that these women were when they were so idealistic and working every day to basically change the foundation of their society. And I really think he channeled their youthfulness. I love that. So did our composer, Margaret Rand. She also was 29 or 30. And when you hear her voice, I feel like you're hearing the voices of these women as they were when they were young, dreaming, you know, of changing things. The other thing, as Shrappa was alluding to, is that by working with animation, we weren't just sort of, if someone talks about a bank, he draws a picture of a bank. But we were tapping into the emotions and the dreams of the women. So when they tell us a story about, I wanted to be a captain of a ship, and they said, no, you can't, you're a girl. We don't just, you know, he shows her kind of piloting this fabulous ship, and then everything goes up in smoke. It all dissolves into a wave. And that's a feeling. There's a feeling you get from that, of what a little girl would feel like when somebody dashes her hopes that way. So I think that's what you meant when you said it enabled us to be more creative, mm-hmm. and to really give you the feeling of being with how they might have expressed it to you at the time, not now, 50 years later, sitting in a chair, you know? And so that was really a beautiful thing. Also, he really got the humor and the playfulness. He just got that from day one. And so that was a perfect match.
And I want you to talk a little bit more about how funny this is and really how spectacularly brave these women were. Rappa, can you tell us more about Iceland and what was going on at the time that you, as you understood it, what were women facing and how has that changed since over the last 50 years?
Yeah, at the time of the strike, I was 11 years old. So I had some idea how things were, but of course it wasn't like, I didn't have like a regular job. I was selling papers on the street, and I did feel a lot of difference between us girls and the boys. But women were not paid as much as men, just like in America. They were maybe, you know, like in the fishing factories, they were standing side by side doing the same job, and women were paid a lot less money. And that was how it was in most of the society. There was, you know, lack of childcare. There was not a great support if you, you know, after a pregnancy. And women had just had enough, you know, they were, and they also felt, the women that were organizing this, they felt that they were behind the Europeans and the Americans at the time. So they wanted to do something spectacular. And so when 1975, the UN announces that it's supposed to be the Women's Year, they just grabbed the idea and they ran with it and came up with something unique, because they wanted to show men that you could not run the society without them. So 90% of women participated in one way or another. And I remember waking up the next day, because I was on the square that day, and I thought, well, you know, now everything's going to be fixed. Of course, that took a lot longer. But you could sort of, you know, this idea had been put into the minds of the people. there were a couple of milestones, but the big milestone came 5 years later when we had our president voted in, Vigdís Finnbogadóttir, the first democratically elected female president. And that was another huge milestone. A couple of years after that, they established an all-women's party that ran for the city council. A year later, an all-women's party that ran for the parliament, which created this environment that all the other parties that had usually just had men on the top list, they decided, okay, we have to put women also in the top seats of our lists. So that changed dramatically, from three women in the parliament to 12. And so there were just, all of a sudden you had issues that related to half the nation being talked about inside of the parliament. And that makes a huge difference, enormous difference. So since then, we have been on this road to equality. And now 15 consecutive years, Iceland has been voted or not voted as identified by the gender index as the best place in the world to be a woman. I mean, we think, yes, we are, but we still have some things to win. We still have to fight for change. And as a matter of fact, there is going to be a woman's strike in a couple of weeks when the anniversary is happening. Still, Iceland today, you have women holding almost all the reins of power. The prime minister is a woman. The president is a woman. The three party leaders that lead the government are all women. The head of the parliament is a woman. The bishop of the national church is a woman. The mayor of Reykjavik is a woman. The chief of police is a woman. And so we have really gone overboard. I mean, we've gone to the other side. But I think, you know, that's to be expected in an equal society, I guess.
Iceland is the only country in the world that requires businesses to pay men and women equally, and they have to file papers every year, and if they don't, then they have to pay a penalty. And it's the only country in the world that has, the government has pledged to reach full equality, they say within 7 years or so. And there is 1 year of shared parental leave between the man and the woman, between the two parents, which is pretty extraordinary. And I think a lot of that comes down to having a substantial percentage of women in elected positions for many decades now.
It's amazing. I mean, it's life-changing, globally altering to see that, especially what's going on here with women being still pushed aside. I wonder, though, what would an 11-year-old standing on the square during the next strike think similarly or differently than what you felt when you were 11?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure what they would be thinking, but I mean, you know how people become complacent, you know, people take things for granted. And I do have one interesting story is that our president, Vigdís, she sat for how many terms?
Four, I think, 16 years. Yeah.
16 years. And in 1996, when she says she's not going to run, there were, of course, new candidates. And there was this one boy who was, I think, six or seven at the time. And he said to his brother, I didn't know men could be presidents. So, you know, yeah. That's
pretty amazing. Well, I'm really, my kids are 26 and 30, and I'm really hoping that this generation will continue to change things and demand equality and not, I mean, it's so crazy here in the US. It's hard to know what to make sense of anymore or how it's going to play out, right? Every day it just gets like, what, you know, like it just doesn't, I mean, the animation would be very helpful for us, right? But speaking of which, I want to go back to that ship because I was really struck by that scene. Tell us, give us a little context for the women that were working on the boats.
You mean for, in what sense? Like for how we found that story or what?
Yeah, and just the story in general.
Mm. Yeah, that story was unknown. But I was talking with one of the one of the people who started the strike. And she said, oh, by the way, in the next office is a woman who works here, and her mother did something amazing that day. And so this woman came in and told me the story, and, you know, my jaw just, wow. You know, I thought that's a movie in itself. But it turned out to be, you know, part of the challenge of being a documentary filmmaker is you need to establish trust with the people who are going to agree to be in your film. And it ended up that although she was incredibly proud of what she'd done, and she's an extraordinary and a strong woman, she was just nervous about being on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of worked, did a dance over the next 5 years, and just couldn't quite get there. And then she saw a series that Hrappa made on she went to the theater and saw it and thought it was terrific. And that gave her the confidence to say, I'll meet with you if you just record me in the audio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Hrappa did. And we would not have that story otherwise. And then, of course, without the animation, you wouldn't get the feeling that you're there on the ship with
right.
them.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about those women, because that was one of the scenes, especially during the interview, the panel discussion at the press club. It struck me as I was watching the film that these women worked on a ship and they were sort of given some power, you know, responsibility. But then how it unfolded for them, because just tell us more about that story, because I think it's really a great example of how opinion shifted because of the strike.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had these three mates on this ship. It was a freight ship that was going, I think, to Russia.
To Russia, carrying timber.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
They must have been carrying fish.
Oh, and bringing back timber.
Yeah.
That's it.
Bring that up.
Yeah.
There's this ringleader, this lady who is named Gila, and she says to the other two mates on the ship, they said, we're going to go on a strike. And so that's what they announced, that they were going to go on a strike. So they embrace themselves, they lock themselves up in the cabin, and they stay in the cabin in their pajamas all day while the guys are like knocking, come on out, you have to cook, you have to clean, what's going on? And they're getting very pissed off. And they, you know, they stuck it out.
Also, the guys were getting hangry because yeah. women were supposed to make... So as lunch approaches, it's not so funny anymore.
Yeah. So then the next day, you know, even the captain is like knocking on the door, you know, but they just didn't move. And the next day, the captain orders them to come back up to the cabin. But part of what they did, the women, is that they had a telegram sent to the square. They didn't know who was going to read it or if anybody was going to receive it, telling them that they should all stick together, be it on land or sea. And then they put their names down and the name of the ship. Okay, so next day they are called up to the cabin of the captain, and they're like shaking in their boots going, oh, now he's going to fire us. And they go upstairs and he gives them champagne.
Mm.
They're like, what? So it turned out that the captain's wife had been on the square. And when she had heard the telegram read on the square, she became very proud. So she had him radioed in on the ship radio that evening. And she said to him, well, you know, you have heroes on your ship and you better treat them nice.
It could have turned out so differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. They could have been tossed over or something crazy like that. But so that kind of power, I mean, this is not the first time in history, right? There's plays about this, women having sex strikes. They won't sleep with their husbands unless the war ends. But talk about like what's happening in 2025 around the world and the women's movement from your perspective, and how this has played in the impact that this has made 50 years ago and how you see it playing forward.
We have had an amazing rollout of the film, which has seems to be inspiring women around the globe. Germany came in very strong. You know, they seem to be very frustrated. Ireland has invited the film because the Irish women are very pissed off that they only have 23% females in the parliament. Japan is rolling it out in the theaters on the 24th. It's going to distribution in 30 theaters in Japan. And that's because they want to have a strike next year. And so it seems like the film is, thankfully, it is seems to be inspiring for women around the globe, which is exactly what we would like to see. And the Icelandic example shows that, okay, it's not easy to change anything, but it can be done.
Yeah, I was with the film in Seoul in South Korea, and our audiences were full of women in their 20s who are part of the movement that's challenging the patriarchy. They had short hair. They weren't wearing makeup. They won't date men. They say they won't have children. And they were honestly hoped they had a notebook and pen, and they were taking notes as they watched the film. And sort of storming me afterwards, I had to sign, you know, programs and things. You know, I was like a rock star for a minute. And they said that, and actually a lot of them were really crying. And they said that they were learning that compromise could be a good tool, because that's, of course, what the Icelandic feminists did. They were willing to renege on the word strike and make it a day off so that every woman could participate. Even women who really maybe certainly didn't want to be considered feminists, but anybody can take a day off. A day off is a nice thing. And they were also taking notes about the humor. Somebody in our screening last night, we had a terrific screening in Millerton, New York, said she was really impressed by the lack of stridency. She kind of raised her hand as a fist when she said that. And that her recollection of our 1970s movement here in the United States was stridency. I have to say that was mine too, and I'm not criticizing it, because they made the changes in the way that they needed to make them, and I have benefited from them. But it was there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of fist. And, you know, I think you see in the film, there was this kind of joyful, use of humor, and also for the women to keep their spirits up. Because as you said, there was a lot of criticism of them. That's something that was kind of a challenge to introduce into the film, because men today are not going to participate in our film and tell us that they opposed the strike or that they thought that the feminists were, you know, a scourge on humanity. But that is how many felt at the time. So we needed to show how courageous these women were in continuing to do what they were doing, because they felt that it would be good for everyone in the long run. And so what we finally resorted to were having actors voice the criticisms that were being made in newspapers, hopefully to convey that.
Yeah, I felt like you struck absolutely all the right notes with it. You know, it's courageous, it's funny, it's well told, it's balanced, and you really get the point across. I think everyone should see this. I hope that it gets onto Netflix as soon as possible so that it's accessible to everyone, and Prime and whoever else has the courage to do it. I had the privilege of doing PR for The Uprising of Women Philanthropy, a book by 10 women from around the world talking about the women's funding movement. And it's kind of the same thing, you know, how do you get something that's been here kind of in the background and push it forward so that we can inspire all girls everywhere to know how brave they can and should be, right?
Absolutely.
And I'll leave you with this last question, we'll leave our audience with. So what is the ultimate goal? What do each of you think we're striving for? What would be the perfect balance?
You mean in terms of what the world would look like?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, wow. That's a big question.
Well, we'd like the world to look like Iceland.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, just be equal. You know, you should be allowed to do whatever you want to do. I mean, it's terrible to look at the way things are shifting in many parts of the world. I mean, Afghanistan, you know, where you have basically a really terrible situation. And then, you know, the shift that's happening in America, that's frightening me a lot, because, you know, I know the quilt of the country. I know, of course, it's a big country and it has many nations within it, but I don't like the way this direction is going at this point. And, you know, we see the right-wing shift in Germany as well, with a similar situation. But, you know, the apartheid in Afghanistan and those things, it's a scary world. So I just hope that people realize, and you know, not only women champion for equality, but that men also would do it the same thing, and just allow 50% of this very creative force that humans are to blossom and be happy in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I hope that the film will help anyone who sees it, I would say, reimagine the possible. You see these ordinary women that truly did something extraordinary that they had no idea they could possibly accomplish. And even when they looked around at each other the next day, having had this proof of concept of what had happened, how the society had stopped that day, they still didn't know if going down the line, their society would change. And it has changed so profoundly. And I tell you, I was almost in tears when I read a line in the former First Lady Eliza Reid's book called Secrets of the Sprakkar. She wrote this during the COVID lockdown, and it's about Iceland's extraordinary women. And she says in there, it's not that Iceland is equal yet, but everyone in Icelandic society, men and women, agree that that is the goal. And I almost started crying because we don't have that agreement in our country. So that would be my goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems so simple. It seems so obvious, but actually it's really a mountain to climb. We there's so many things that you wish you could fit them all into the film. As people said wonderful things, it didn't always fit the narrative at that moment. But when we interviewed the then president of Iceland, whose father burned the hot dogs, big tragedy, a cook, really traumatized by that. He said, you know, Pam, it's like, I feel like we in Iceland, we're climbing this mountain and we're climbing and we're climbing. He said, Pam, we're not at the top yet. We're getting close though. And we're looking down, we're reaching our hand out and saying, come with us, you know, we're going to get there together. And I just love that. I love that image. And that's why I just think that Iceland can be obviously every society is different, et cetera, but that Iceland could be a beacon and an inspiration. It is for me.
Yes, oh, so beautifully said. And such a beautiful film, The Day Iceland Stood Still. Go find it if you haven't seen it or heard of it. It's amazing. I'm hopefully gonna be able to link, well, we'll link to your website, your fabulous website, and put the trailer up so that people can get a taste of it. And contact information for you too, so that we can figure out how everyone can have this in them and going forward, so women and men can make the world a better place, right? That's all we can do.
Thank you so much, Hope.
Well, thank you. Thank you to all of our readers, listeners, and watchers on YouTube. This is the Truly Amazing Women Show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud to be here with these two amazing filmmakers and writers. Iceland, America, we're all one, right? All right. We'll see you all soon. Be well, and go see The Day Iceland Stood Still. Mm-hmm.